You're listening to Insight. This is a special coverage edition of our show on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. We did invite Sacramento County District Attorney Anne Marie Schubert to join us today for a follow-up conversation to her press conference on Saturday. She declined. Much discussion has swirled around her decision to use and make public the contents of Stephon Clark's cell phone. I talked this morning with a longtime Sacramento criminal defense attorney, Arthur Bowie. He now serves on the appellate court. He's been a public defender, and for the past 8 years, he's an adjunct professor at Sac State. So our conversation began with his reaction to the DA's decision.
Well, I was not surprised by the decision not to prosecute. I was a little concerned with the way the presentation kind of rolled out, though. I felt that there was some concerns about some of the privacy issues related to Mr. Clark's text and emails. I didn't think that was necessary. But the fact that they did not prosecute in this case, I'm not surprised by that.
Let's focus then on the cell phone. What privacy rights did Stephon Clark have or not have once he had died?
Once a person's deceased, their rights begin to fall away. I mean, a dead man, in theory, has little or no rights when it comes to privacy. However, we still have the Stored Communications Act, which requires law enforcement to get content. They have to get a warrant. So I wasn't surprised by the fact that they got the information that they did. Privacy rights, I mean, it's for a deceased person, they begin to fall off. But in this particular case, I would imagine law enforcement went through proper channels in gathering the information that they had.
We don't know exactly what vehicle the DA's office used to get the downloads, as Ms. Schubert referred to them. But I do want to play a little bit of how she set up the importance of the cell phone evidence. So we're going to hear part of the press conference on Saturday. This is DA Anne Marie Schubert.
Was Mr. Clark filming the officers when he was in the backyard and he confronted them? And then secondly, what was going on in Mr. Clark's life? Is there anything in the cell phone that would show us that may have an impact on this case that we would have to consider?
So that last phrase, what we would have to consider, later on, as you know, Professor, she referred to the information that we were about to hear, the details from the cell phone, as being something that a jury would consider. So let's explore that a little bit. Would, in fact, a jury have seen this information?
Quite possibly, especially in assault-type cases. Evidence that the victim may have had some type of a history for violence or some type of reason for acting the way that they acted, their state of mind, that could be relevant in a trial. I'm not sure how much of this would have come in, but let me say this. But that doesn't mean that the opposing party doesn't advocate to try to stop it from coming in. That doesn't mean we don't fight to try to convince the court that, number one, it's not relevant, or number two, to the degree that it can be used.
And that's one thing. I did want to flip that scenario on you. You're a longtime criminal defense attorney. If you had been trying to introduce that information into a case, would the DA's office have fought you on that?
Oh, they'd have fought me tooth and nail. Of course they would have. These particular evidentiary issues are playing out in our courtrooms every day here in Sacramento in criminal trials. So to say, well, that weighed so heavy that was the, you know, one of the main deciding reasons we decided not to, factors we decided not to prosecute on, I kind of found that questionable.
I don't know if she said it was a main reason for the decision, but she did introduce the victim's state of mind. And the response by the community and many people has been, what about the officer's state of mind? How do you see and hear us hearing about the victim and not the officers?
Well, that's a systemic problem in our society. whether it be in California or a national problem. Law enforcement officers are well protected when it comes to what information the public can know, even in a criminal trial, to what information about their backgrounds we can present or may have access to or not have access to. In this particular case, we heard nothing about these officers' backgrounds. We don't know what text they sent 2 days earlier, what communications they had leading up to this event. We don't know what their particular toxicology levels or what made substances may have been in their systems. We don't know what family problems they may or may not have had. We don't know a whole lot about their social media posts or any of that, because typically their training records, their employment records, and any type of personal information about them is well protected by law. So it's kind of, and to what degree the district attorney knew about any of that background, we don't know, because she didn't say whether
we don't know. But there are times when a victim's state of mind is appropriate. Would you say that's so in this case? Was it appropriate for the public to know?
I'm not sure that it was appropriate for the public to know. I do know in filing decisions or in terms of trial strategy or tactics, that's something that's going to be looked at. Again, it's not uncommon. The law speaks to times when the victim's state of mind is relevant. It may or may not have been relevant here. I don't know all the evidence, but it seems to me that what they did put out in the public was things that had happened a couple of days earlier, if I'm not mistaken, as opposed to what had happened right that day or within hours of the event themselves.
And that was my conversation with longtime Sacramento criminal defense attorney and Sac State professor Arthur Bowie. He was just referring to the DA's discussion of a domestic violence incident that happened between Stephon Clark and the mother of his children, Selena Manny. I thought it might be helpful for you to hear a bit of the press conference that she held later that day. She had been silent on the subject for the whole year since Stephon Clark's death, but she did speak about the fact that this information was made public, the contents of Stephon Clark's phone.
What I feel the DA announced today was not about what happened on March 16th, was not about what happened on March 17th. It was what happened on March 18th when the officers murdered my fiance, murdered Stephon Clark. That's what this is about. It's not about anything that happened before that. It's about the officers who murdered him.
That's right.
Murdered him because he had a cell phone in his hand.
That's right. That's right,
Selena. And now he'll never come back to us.
Again, those were the comments from Selena Manny on Saturday. I do want to let you know that among the many resources on our website, we also have a hotline. If you are listening and you would like to call and leave a comment or ask a question, that number is 916-668-9311. Again, 916-668-9311. And let's end this hour where we began with comments from the Clark family. This was from their press conference yesterday. This is Stephon Clark's brother, Stevante.
Even though I'm surprised by the way she handled the presentation of releasing these officers of any wrongdoing, I'm not surprised at the fact that she let these officers off. You know, I'm just surprised at like the way she did it. Yeah. You know, it was just uncalled for. Unnecessary. It hurt the whole family, not just the community. It was just, you know, Stephon was, it was like he was killed again, you know? It was like he was literally like just ran his name through the dirt. It hurts. And I see people peacefully protesting it. I seen it at the police department the other day. I seen it at Arden Mall. They call them the Arden 13. I was telling them about that. You know, everything peaceful that's done, we support it, you know? But Stephon is more than just protest. Stephon is legislative change. Stephon is communities being united. Stefan is dreams being fulfilled, not just a kid who died in his grandmother's backyard.
The family is planning a weekend of remembrance in honor of Stefan Clark. That will be March 15th, leading up to the one-year anniversary through to the 18th. The events will be posted and much more information on our website. And we're going to close now, although the story continues. This is just 1 hour, one piece of it, but that is Insight special coverage for today. I'm Beth Ruyak. Our producers are Cody Drabble and Bert Johnson. We had help from Sally Schilling, from Nick Miller, Jessica Maria Ross, the Cap Radio news and digital teams. Our technical director is Mark Jones. Our engineer today, Anthony Van Hook. Insight's executive producer is Joe Barr. Thanks for being with us for this special coverage on Insight on Capital Public Radio. Thank you.